This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh boy, oh boy. Let's say Florida is a perfect place for writers to write and a perfect place for writers to come from. This is so exciting. I am talking today to somebody who has given me hours and hours of absolute joy. This is just too much. Soman Chenani is, what can I say? He is terrific. Hi, Soman.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Wow, I love talking to all the authors that I interview, but I tell you, for the past month, or maybe I've had the book for about 6 weeks. It's so nice that I get the book before everybody else.
Of course.
And the new book is One True King, and it is the sixth in, what, two-part trilogy. Wow. I tell you, you know, thanks to the pandemic, I had really a lot of extra time to read. So I could go back and read more of your work. I didn't have a program in 2013 when the first book came out, but I would have invited you if I had. But it is so exciting. Can you imagine? It's been seven years,
6 books. It's been sort of a life's work in a short period of time.
Wow. Well, I mentioned you were born in Florida, right?
Yep, I'm here right now. In fact, I'm in Miami, you know, because this is my hometown. So once the pandemic hit New York, I was like, all right, I'm out.
that's a good. It's so much better to be in Florida, especially.
Sure.
And I'm here on the Clearwater side. So if ever you come to this side of the state, if we start moving around again, you have to come to the studio. It is such a thrill, really. I know for all of your fans that this book has come out, and it's a perfect time because, you know, the poor kids out there are suffering.
Oh, yeah, they're stuck inside, you know.
And I'm sure a lot of them have been rereading books 1 through 5, and, you know, just preparing themselves for today because the new book is really quite amazing. And when you think about it, 6 books, 7 years, you've done an amazing, amazing job here of creating a world, a character. And I can't believe that no one ever thought of it before you, because it's such a clever idea. So let's talk a little bit about the school for good and evil. And then we'll talk about your website, which is also terrific, and about the quiz, which I've taken a couple times. I will tell people, someone has this quiz on, and you can see if you are ever or never, and he's going to explain that. And so I've taken it, but often the questions start off, they ask you how you would respond in certain situations. The situations are always interesting. But so often the question starts,
Of course, yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that you have to almost do with kids is make them, before they jump at an answer, you have to sort of use the language to kind of calm them down and be like, okay,
yeah,
you know, think about this in a rational way. What would you actually do, you know?
I love that quiz. Take it. I'm going to take it again. Yes, I'm doing everything calmly. Yes, so I'm doing everything calmly. Wow. So tell us the interesting thing here for people. Of course, adults probably haven't read your book. Although I tell you, I get such a kick out of it because they're very intellectually stimulating. On many levels, I should tell people that, of course, you are a Harvard graduate, summa cum laude, you know, really smart. So there's it's built in there. And the nice thing about it, being a Harvard graduate, I'm so happy you didn't become a lawyer.
Oh, no. I mean, I think, you know, to me, I tried to go the business route. You know, I became a consultant after graduation, and I think that lasted like a year and a half before I got fired. I felt like I didn't sort of fit into the corporate world. You know, I always had stories going in my head and things I wanted to do creatively, and so I just didn't last very long. I think ultimately I just wasn't meant for that world, and any time I tried to get in there, I ended up getting fired, you know. So
well, thank goodness
the world kind of directs you. Yeah, the world kind of directs you.
You know, Lee Child got fired from his job, so he started writing. So getting fired obviously has can be a really great thing, because now you have the six and I'm holding this up because I'm also on YouTube, and I can show people the cover. The covers to your books are all so wonderful. The new one, well, tell us about the main characters, because we have good and evil, and we have a blonde and a dark-haired girl, black with beautiful black hair. So tell us about these two girls. Tell us. It's funny. I have blonde hair, so one would have thought that I might relate to the blonde, but we'll talk about that in a minute. So tell us about these two girls.
Sure. So Sophie and Agatha are these two girls who live in a small town where every 4 years two kids get kidnapped to go to the School for Good and Evil, where sort of the best behaved kid in town will be trained to be a hero at the School for Good, and the worst kid will be trained to be a villain at the School for Evil. And everyone kind of knows that these two girls are going to get kidnapped, because Sophie is sort of your classic fairy tale princess. She's beautiful, she's smart, she's kind, you know, she's all the sort of things that you would expect someone who is a fairy tale princess to be, you know, and she sort of dreams of that. It's almost like a Disney princess who knows that's what her destiny is. And then her best friend is this girl, Agatha, who lives in a graveyard, you know, is obsessed with death, has a one-eyed cat, like everyone thinks is a witch, looks like a witch, wears black every day, you know, and so she, everyone knows, is going to the School for Evil. And so then, you know, the whole story kicks off when they're both kidnapped, just like everyone predicts, except they get switched into the wrong schools. And, you know, Sophie gets dropped into the School for Evil with all these murderers and monsters, and Agatha gets dropped into the School for Good with all the princes and princesses.
And you do such a beautiful job in creating the atmosphere for the books and talking about the school and what it looks like and why the on the good side everything is pink. Pink, mm-hmm. a lot of pink, and which is funny because I never liked pink, so right there I was moving over to that evil school there. Okay. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you know. It is, we might say it's stereotypical, but it's funny.
Oh, but on purpose, you know, on purpose, because I think with all those sort of, you know, things that represent fairy tales, we always associate blue with boys and girls with pink. And so the first thing you do when you get to the school is see two towers for the girls that are pink and two towers for the boys that are blue. And so, you know, I use these stereotypes in order to break things down. So you get there and you just assume that you're in Disney fairy tale world, but little by little you realize that you are very much not, you know. So I like using stereotypes in order to make you think you know what's going to happen, and then really sort of systematically break everything down.
And you certainly do. And it's a combination of, you have so many characters now throughout the six books. There are so many characters, and I, from my point of view, I had so much fun as I was going back through the books and getting familiar with all of the characters. I love how you use names from different areas of your life. Now you were of course a tennis player, and I love how you will use a tennis player's name. Like
Every once in a while I'll sneak one in, you know.
Oh, I know, like Pospisil. Czech name. So we have a Czech player, because I remember watching him, because I we have relatives who are Czech, and so we're always, you know, on the side of the Czech. It doesn't matter how good he is, but as long as he's a Czech.
Yeah. No, I like using I mean, one of the cool things about having been into tennis for so long was that I had this huge bank of names from all over the world. And when you're running a fantasy world, you want to have that representation, you know? So I think it was important to me to be able to represent different cultures, you know? Even if in a fantasy world you don't have the one-on-one, you know, patterning between culture and race and things like that you would normally in writing a realistic novel.
Well, I bet Vasek Pospisil gets a kick out of it. You know, I'm sure he never...
I'm sure he'll never know. But
what do you mean he'll never know? Somebody's got to tell him. I mean, I think he would get a kick out of it. I think anyone would really. If you were writing another book and you used Patsy with a Z, you know, that's an unusual name, Patsy with a Z.
yeah, I've never seen Patsy with a Z.
No, and that's because I got my name from Jimmy Hoffa, which is another story that I have. It's funny, but nobody has used that yet. I'm waiting. You know, I've talked now to what in 5 years I've talked to like 500 authors. Somebody should pick it up. You know, Patsy with a Z, it's a nice name. You know, it's memorable.
No, it's 100%. It's a really good name.
and all of the, really, I love a lot of your names, of course, are Sanskrit, and I love that because I've discovered over the years that I have a connection to authors. It's almost a magical connection, much like whatever your connection with storybook characters, that something in my life will touch their life, and in your case, of course, you have a lot of Sanskrit names or Indian names, and for me that's fascinating because I'm writing a book set in India. And as a matter of fact, one of the characters, well, a very small bit part character, but I'm going to be mentioning him, is a judge whose name is Shrier. Mm. Just like your name, you know, Chainani.
Right.
And from Gujarat. And so it's funny, it's an unusual name. You don't see that name. And so when I started hearing about you, I realized I've got a character in my book with that name. So, but it's nice.
Yeah.
It's nice. I don't know if you're from Gujarat, but it's. I'm trying to learn. It's a very difficult language. I'm like.
Well, I think also when you have to pick names, it comes with so much weight because that name follows the character around. So usually it's best if you pick names that you have some experience with or some kind of personal connection to or something, because otherwise when you assign a name out of nowhere, it can be, I don't know, I just think that you don't have the same anchor. And so for me, you know, naming people after people I know or tennis players I know or something, like at least I have a point of reference, you know, something to work from.
Well, like, let's talk a minute about the dean of the school.
Yeah, so there's two deans. There's Dean Lady Lesso, who works at the school for evil, and Clarissa Dovey, who works at the school for good. And those two are your kind of Sophie and Agatha all grown up, where they have an intense rivalry between the two of them, but they're also best friends. And so I love the idea of two deans of rival schools secretly, you know, enjoying each other's company, but in public having to pretend like they're enemies.
Well, when you started this, I mean, you obviously knew you were going to write a trilogy, but wow, I'm trying to think of what your mind must have been filled with to have all these ideas. That's a thrilling thing about being a writer, that you have to know that you have in that head of yours all of these ideas.
I mean, I think I don't really feel like the ideas are there until I'm working. You know, it's quite sort of seamless where as I'm working, the ideas come. You know, I don't plot or outline or anything like that. I feel like I try to flow with instinct and wherever the story takes me, you know. So I tend to have quite a bit of trust in the process rather than trying to kind of manage it or force things.
And in the books, you have how can I say, you have like a purpose in some ways, that there are things that you want to get across about what is good, what is evil, and have children or adults, in my case, you know, start thinking about it. And I found, you know, of course, one of the quotes that people often talk about is the one, past is present and present is past, which, you know, you sort of is a key in some ways to this, to your books.
I think, to me, the idea that everything in terms of what we do can be found in past experience somewhere, you know, like the fact that all the lessons that we need to learn are either inside of us or we've had some window to in the past, you know. So, or just history itself, you know, history often has the secrets to succeeding in the present, you know, especially in this particular moment where we feel like we're inventing everything new. But again, you know, societies have faced pandemics before, societies have had these kind of riots and things before. And so at the very least, we can use the past to kind of inform our reactions to the present, you know, and understand, like, why is this happening again? And how do we move forward in a way that doesn't, you know, just bury things underground so that they come back?
Well, you know, as I was watching, as a matter of fact, because I've been reading your books and trying to understand good and evil in general, and then we are faced with this, first with the pandemic, and we're locked in the house, and we have all this time to think and to, for me, I've been reaching out over the past 2 months. I actually was broadcasting from my house, from my kitchen, for about a month before I came back to the studio. And I was reaching out to children because I really wanted to do a lot of children's books and reach out to parents, because I know the importance of reading. When I was a child, of course, I was always lost in a book. That was my life, was I was lost in a book. And it was certainly, for me, a great joy. And I feel so sad for children who don't read, who don't have that release, that they can pick up a book, read it. And I thought, you know, we were building a generation now, which is good, of kids who are reading since the sort of the Harry Potter phenomenon came, that the children can read long books. You don't have to dumb down books and make them simple or make them easy. Children have an enormous capacity. I remember when they first came out, people said, oh, well, they can't read a long book. And but they can. And mostly your books have been long. I think book number 2 was the shortest, right?
Yes. Yeah. I think for me, the thing is that kids want it to be long. They want the complexity and sophistication. Their brains are so fast-moving and spongy that they can handle complexity in a way we can't. You know, we watch Game of Thrones and struggle to keep everything straight. They could watch Game of Thrones in 2 seconds if it was, you know, appropriate or whatever, but they would be able to handle the complexity and the details and the maze of everything in a second, you know? So in a way, everyone's always asking me, oh, do you have to dumb things down for children? And I said, it's the opposite. I have to write to the absolute maximum complexity of plot or they won't be happy. It has to be kind of complicated and difficult and, you know, dense and all those things. And then they'll happily handle it. It's just sometimes it's a language. You just have to make sure you're not getting lost in kind of the arias of adult novel writing, and that you keep things moving quickly. But, you know, I by nature tend to write in a pretty quick clip. That's just sort of my cadence of my writing. So, you know, I think for kids, you can't dumb it down. They just won't read the book. They'll feel like you're talking down to them, you know. And that's the one thing that kids always tell me. It's like, they go, your book doesn't feel like it's trying to teach me something. And of course I am, right, in my own way, but I don't spoon feed them in that sort of like patronizing, I'm talking to children kind of way.
I think it does a wonderful job of actually opening their minds, that they start to think, well, Is this the right way? Is this the right attitude? Is a person, you know, if they're mean, why they're mean, and I, it opens up so many avenues for them to think about. And I know that you know, simply when I was with working with children from my Sunday school class, that they love books that just keep them going. And they get sad when a book is too short. Exactly that. And, mm-hmm. and the new book is over 600 pages, and every page is absolutely it. When we talk about a page turner, one, you write great dialogue, and as you said, to move the story along, and your dialogue is great, and it really moves the story. And I found, I know that it's sort of. Talked about is for young, very, quite young children, but I think anybody would enjoy these stories.
Oh yeah, and they do. I mean, I think if you look at our age range, like, you know, the sixth book has come out, and the letters I get, you know, are all run the gamut. You know, like a lot of parents read it, a lot of grandparents love the series, like a lot of adults read the series. It's the reason Netflix is going to be making a movie out of it, and the reason why they chose to make a movie out of it was because the appeal, the age range for it, is just so vast. It's like, it's almost like The Princess Bride, where anybody could read The Princess Bride. And that's what we wanted to do with this, was make something that anybody could read, because it's like a classic fairy tale.
You know, if we could read a book about, children in, you know, a Dickens story, where mostly populated by children, for an adult, this book, I think, is fascinating the series is fascinating, because, as I said, particularly now, during this time where we are in a crisis mode again. As you said, it's happened before, it'll probably happen again. But it would be nice if our young people, or any people, or everybody, would like be able to take that calm step. That's why I got a kick out of how you used the word calm, that most people don't understand that if you just calm down and try to think about things, think things through, and as the lessons that you're giving, that they things have happened before, and I want you to really, you know, tell the listeners, and particularly I'm going to be talking over the next few months to a lot of parents groups, you know, via Zoom and all of that, to promote books for their children to read during the summer, because it's sad to me if they're not out there. I spent my childhood outside, you know. So what do you want to tell the parents there? How can they really help their children get into these books and to start thinking about and talking about good and evil?
I think, to me, when you're finding books for kids, you can't force feed them stuff, right? So in a way, otherwise they're going to think books are like medicine, and then they're just not going to have any interest. And so usually what I'll tell with a kid is, you know, listen, you have to find a book that speaks to you so that you can't wait to read it, the way that you can't wait to watch your favorite show, or you can't wait to watch video games. And, you know, you might think that's unrealistic to find that book that you get addicted to, but, you know, we've seen this now with more than 3 million kids around the world who've gotten addicted to The School for Good and Evil and read all 6 books and get sort of hooked on it. So what I'll tell a kid is, listen, you know, get the first book and read the first 20 pages. And if you stop and you don't want to keep going, great. You know, then you win. You defeated me and the book, and then you have to go look for another one, right? And so usually what ends up happening is they'll be like, okay, that's easy. 20 pages, I can do 20 pages. And they start reading and they get to page 20. And of course, once you get to page 20, that's you're sort of hooked, because you know, they get dropped in the wrong schools, and then you start asking, why are they in the wrong schools? Where are they? What is this school? I'm in a new world. Which school would I go to? All these sort of big questions. And then you get pulled in. And then once you finish the first book, you get to the next book and the next book and the next book. And all of a sudden, you're a reader, the way that kids were with Harry Potter. So School for Good and Evil has been interesting because so many first-time readers who never used to read and had no interest in reading, this became the thing that made them a reader. And so then when they're done, they go on to read other series, and then they become lifelong readers, you know? So I tried to write a series that felt like the old Grimm's fairy tales that worked for everybody. And the more reluctant a reader is, the more kind of, you know, excited they are to finally be deep into a book. Like, we just had a Zoom party for, you know, thousands of kids around the world for the big release of the sixth book. And it was fun to see them all sort of pop up on Zoom, because you just see how different everybody is, you know. You just see kids who are 10, you see kids who are 25, you know, you see some adults in there, and everybody, you know, had a different reason for reading the books and falling in love with them. So I think the important thing for reading is to really match up a kid with a book that they want to read. You know, I'll never tell somebody, if they're like, I don't like your book, no one ever says that to me directly, but if they don't like the book, then like, don't read it, you know, to find something that you love even more. I think the most important thing in finding a book is something that is personal to you and keeps you reading.
Now, one of the things that it's so much fun to read your books, because of course you have this absolutely wonderful, vivid imagination. Is that your phone?
Yeah, don't worry, it's on the other side.
Oh, forget it. Let your dog answer the phone. how is he, by the way?
He's good. He, you know, had surgery a couple months ago, but he's doing better now.
Okay. Well, for anybody who has seen him on one of your YouTube things, we care about him. You know, tell us a little bit about him, because he is quite a character himself.
His name is Dougie, and he's a cute little French bulldog. He's not the most intelligent creature in the world, but he is loving and sweet and adorable. And the fans of the series tend to love him, because he just is kind of that sort of perfect mix of cluelessness and cuteness.
And when he looks at you, he looks at you like, oh wow, you know, my master is like really, really strange guy here.
He's hilarious. I don't know.
Your little videos are absolutely delightful, and I can see that those alone will draw people to you, your books, because you're very amusing just in and of yourself. And
thank you.
Yeah, you know, it's cute to watch you. Now, let's talk a little bit about your website, because you have a great website. As I was saying, one of the things I love quizzes, and so I right away gravitated to taking this quiz. And tell us the purpose of this quiz. What do your fans say about it?
We try to really give you the experience of going to the school. So we ask kids to say, okay, what, you know, is your soul mostly good? Is your soul mostly evil? And I have them actually take a quiz that kind of morally investigates the depths of their soul to give them a percentage of whether they're good or evil. So you can find that on the School for Good and Evil website, schoolforgoodandevil.com. Over 3 million kids have taken it. It's a fun test to take, regardless of your age.
Oh, it is. It's very cute. It's I enjoyed the questions, and they give you pose a situation, and you have to decide how you would react to it. And I love those kind of things. And so 3 million already. Well, that, you know, I think there's going to be a lot more, of course, once the Netflix comes out. And that's a wonderful thing about having, you know, a book series picked up, is that it brings even more fans to the books.
Absolutely. And I think with the movie, it's its own, like, interesting translation of the material, right? So the movie's going to have its own feeling and tone and all of that stuff, and it will never be a literal adaptation of the book, but hopefully it just brings new people who are curious about the book.
Well, you have a natural talent for dialogue, as I mentioned that, because, you know, I was a script writer, and of course you wrote the scripts for the television series, the Netflix series.
I wrote the first few drafts. So it's been in development since 2013. And so I worked on it until about 2016, I think. And then they brought on writers after that, and it's still been going. So I think by now we've had 4, 6, I think like 6 or 7 writers.
Yeah, that happens. And that happened. I was like usually number 6 or 7. when I came in to fix something, but it's not a matter of fix. It's a matter of it's wonderful that you were able to put your input first so that the script writers have a difficult time until they can really understand a character. And for me, as I was reading your books, I was seeing it as a film in my head. And so right away I said to myself, wow, I'd love to work on this film, because there's so much material, beautiful, everything that you do. I mean, everything, just little things like the flower ground. That right there, wow. Tell us about the flower ground. That grabbed me so fast when I read it. I just love that.
I think for me it was that I wanted to create a transportation system in the book that felt different from anything I'd seen before. So I thought, what if there was a subway system? But what, you know, how do you make a subway system in the fairy tale world? And I thought, you know, I'll give it that kind of Alice in Wonderland feel by making it all plants, you know? So then it's essentially the New York subway system, but made entirely of different kind of plants. So all the different colors of the line correspond to a different kind of plant life.
Yeah, and it doesn't smell. It doesn't smell.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just a nicer place.
Oh, you mentioned you lived in New York, so you've been on the subway there, and which is not a great thing. I went to New York. I haven't been on the New York subway for 30 years because I couldn't deal with it. So and as a matter of fact, when they were cleaning up the subway during this pandemic, I was thinking of that. I was thinking of how they could turn it into flower ground. And actually they should. You know, every line should be, they should paint it with flowers inside and outside.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it would calm people down too. You know,
I think so. That's why I created sort of the flower ground, to feel like a calming place, you know?
Yeah.
Like a place you went into and
and not get all,
you went in there and you felt relaxed.
You know, now when you get into a subway car, you're all tight and sort of stiff and scared. But it would be so nice. And so something like that, all these little clever things that you have. And I remember I was talking to Mike Resnick once. He's a sci-fi writer. And I said it would just be fun to be one of those little mini, you know, submarines that floats around in your brain and sees all of the beautiful, wonderful ideas that you have in there. And I have a feeling that your brain is equally interesting because obviously, so you were a big reader when you were a kid. Is that why you have this ability to sort of jump in and create all of this?
I think so. I think, you know, naturally I had a creative mind from being a big reader as a child. You know, that was sort of my dream, you know, to write when I was older. So I think language and everything like that was just part of who I was. So I'm not surprised that becoming a storyteller was sort of my destiny, you know, and what I was meant to do ultimately. So, you know, and here we are at the end of the journey. So,
and we're at the end with a book called One True King. Now, when you got to the end, well, we're not going to do any spoilers. But when you got to the end, how did you feel? It was like, even for me, I'm reading it and I'm thinking, well, is it the end? Like, I'm hoping for something more, because I tell you, one gets invested in your characters.
I think to me, it's the end. I felt relieved that what I wanted to do, I accomplished, you know, but where I wanted to go with these characters, I did. And so I feel like I told the full story. And yeah, it was a good feeling in the end. It was where I wanted to leave it. And I think, you know, judging from the reaction so far, readers are happy where it went. I'm going to have to jump off because I have one more interview coming, but I wanted to thank you so much for having me. And I really appreciate all the time you took to learn about the world and bringing this out to your readers.
And I will promote it all through the summer, because I think it's wonderful, wonderful way for children to get lost into wonderful writing. The writing is so top notch, that when they're reading this, they're preparing themselves for a lifetime of joy of reading. And you're giving giving them joy on paper. So thank you so much. I really am so grateful that you could give me so much time. And Soman Chenani.
My pleasure.
Soman Chenani, and it's The School for Good and Evil, book six. The final book is out today. But everybody who reads this book, and they could read it, start here and go back to the beginning.
Oh, absolutely.
And
they can jump in.
It's a standalone, but anybody who reads this one will want to go back to the very beginning. And you are just a fabulous person. And I think that what you're doing for children is wonderful. And I really appreciate that you are on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you again.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay. Bye-bye. Okay. Well, you know, I've been talking to a lot of children's authors, and so it was wonderful that I got to spend some time with him, because when you're looking at the news and you're saying what's going on in the world, and you see things like young people tearing down statues of this or that or whatever. I'm not saying which ones annoy me, we're doing, but the one that really I will say that really annoys me, I can see no reason, absolutely no reason, that anyone would attack a statue of Gandhi. It's just, it's crazy. As I said, I'm involved in, writing a book about India, set back in the 1800s, but still I take a great interest in it, and I'm trying to think of the good and evil, where the minds, and that's why I think of all the authors I've interviewed, I've really been happy this week. I had two of the best. Owen Colfer was on Tuesday, and of course his series is Artemis Fowl, and there's a lot in both of these series. In Artemis Fowl and in The School for Good and Evil, these are really fantastic authors. These are authors who not only are, talented, extremely talented as authors. Their writing is terrific. But they also both are very clever. They're very clever about creating characters of interest and stories of interest. But the wonderful thing about them, they do have this hope that children will, and again, it's the word calm. I found that as I'm reading this book, and there are many examples of goodness and badness happening in the books, and you do take some time to reflect. You do start thinking about what is good, what is bad. And if you're out there and you're saying, what should I do for the summer? And I hope that we'll, be able to start getting out there. But in case we can't, or even if we can, these books are perfect to read all summer long. You start with this. I would actually start with book one. But if if you're going to give gifts to kids, but anyone out there, if they started with a new book today, which is, it's a big book, so I think it's 614 pages, something like that, and it's called One True King. And it really introduces the characters very nicely, and if I was anybody reading it, and this happened to me, it's funny, I read the entire book. It's wonderful that I get all these first edition books. Now I have to get him to sign it. I have to go somewhere and meet him. But the wonderful thing is that as I'm reading it, and I know I'm getting to the end, I'm at the last little bit, and I say I'm going to put it away for a while. I didn't want to know the last three or four chapters. I said I'm just going to calm down myself and stop. And then I took a few days, and I actually went back and looked at some of the other books, reminding myself of the characters, and I said, this is really fascinating how he manages and this is for all you authors out there, or any of you who are dreaming of writing, wow, this is a good example of how you build characters. And I mentioned, though, I wanted to talk to him about the name, because he uses names, it's almost strategic. Many of the names that he uses have other meanings. And for example, when I was reading the different characters, he uses quite a few of Indian names and words like Rina, which is angel, and Priyanka, which is amiable and lovable and happy. And so he's sort of based the characters here. You get a feeling for a character based on the name. Bodhi is one of the students in the school for good. And then in the school for bad, for evil, the school of for evil, again, as he explained, the school for good is all pink and blue and cheerful looking, and the school for evil is dark, and it's really a scary looking castle, and there are wolves and all sorts of things like that. And again, he has in his he has the characters who are sent to that school, and he very cleverly uses names that really reflect, I think, the characters and make them memorable. And this is what you're looking for. As an author, it's so important that you try to really connect to your readers by having names that they will remember, or that when the names, you know, come up in another situation. I mean, they might be in a social situation, and when they hear a name, like they're going to hear Agatha Christie every once in a while on television here and there and everywhere. But for them, for the ones who have read this book, they know immediately who Agatha is. They know what she looks like. They know why she went to this school for good, and why, you know. So it's all sort of wrapped in there, sort of a network of things that he's created here. Very smart author. Boy, and of course, being picked up by Netflix shows how smart he is. I don't know if he ever dreamed that. Well, maybe he did, because he looks to me like he's one heck of a smart guy. And that's what you can be too as an author. You can say, I'm going to write a series, and I'm going to have this, you know, populated by characters that are interesting and intriguing, not just the main characters, but all the sort of side characters. And that it's sort of like why I think so many new movies, modern movies, are not as good as some of the old black and white movies. If you notice in the old movies, in black and white movies like Arsenic and Old Lace, which is one of my favorite black and white movies, now, there are a lot of side characters in that. Yes, you have Cary Grant as the main character, but you have all these side little characters who are given a little bit of dialogue, whether it's the policeman. You have the ants, of course, but it's those side characters, the little characters, the taxi driver. That character in that film is vital to the film. And so often nowadays we have in films, they don't give a line because of union rules. They hesitate to give anyone a line that's absolutely not necessary. So you don't have all these really intriguing little side characters. They might actually show people reaction to their face, but they don't have a line that sort of sticks with you, or a personality that you recognize. And that's why I'm getting a lot of books from all of you out there, and I really love getting all these books, because I have a chance here, and I'm get them in sort of category. I get them in waves, actually. I get sort of the summer beach books, and I've had a lot of those, and so I've got a lot of books to review over the summer, and they all have covers that look like the beach. They have, you know, girls in swimsuits and the ocean, the sea, a lake, something like that, something to take. And they're all called, you know, summer books. But they're all so much alike, too, and that's my problem. I have to go through them and pick out ones that are not just like the four main girls in the story. I need books that have some depth to them. That's why, for example, Carol J. Perry's books, her Witch City Mysteries, I right away hone in on Aunt Ibby. Aunt Ibby is, to me, she's the one that I'm always interested in seeing what she's up to in every book. And so often in like these beach books I'm getting, I don't remember the characters after a while. And that's bad. They're nice, they quick reads, but they don't have a character. And so often it's a side character that would bring me back to read that author again. So if you are just starting off and you're saying, I'm going to write a series, I would suggest that you look at this, because I think he probably knew right from he had done some film work, so he's a real smart guy, and I'm sure that he thought, oh, I can play this out. I think he was going to do a trilogy, and then he realized, of course, they're bestsellers. Everyone went to the New York Times bestselling list. I mean, like, immediately. They didn't wait. They didn't hesitate. They opened up, and I'm sure this one opened up today on the New York Times bestselling list. But that came from real strategic planning and thought and, of course, talent. But part of the talent is being smart enough to know that you have to have all these other characters to keep your books interesting and to add depth to your dialogue. In Carol J. Perry's book, it's Aunt Ibby who so often has the great dialogue, the great insights. And just like in this series, The School for Good and Evil, there are lots of side characters. I think there must be maybe 50, but over the period of six books, each book is, you know, 500, 600 pages. This is a lot of writing, you know, 3,000 pages of writing. So he needs all those characters, but they work. Everyone works, and some don't appear in every book. Some characters, like from book one, appear in book five, but they're sort of welcome. You say, yeah, I was wondering where you were. And, you know, that's, if a writer achieves that, if you're reading book five and suddenly a character who you haven't seen for four books, shows up and you're happy about it, think about that as an author. Think about what that means. That character got into the reader's brain. And we as readers are looking forward to meeting this character again. This is an amazing talent, but it also requires an amazing mind and somebody to think things out. So that's why I would suggest that myself, I think everybody should use Scrivener. I know people, you know, are so used to using a Word, but Scrivener allows you to really have character studies and that you save and that you can expand on. So they're right there at your fingertips. And Scrivener, I think, costs $29. I mean, goodness gracious. And it's a really easy program to learn. And I highly recommend it, because the more I see of authors, the more I realize that they really have to have these side characters. I don't care what they are, a taxi driver, nowadays an Uber driver. But those little characters that mean a lot, and I'm sure that, you know, in series, that sometimes you might get the same Uber driver. So five books later, you might get the same Uber driver who has the same characteristics, and somebody will say, yeah, gee, I'm glad. Yeah, I like that person. So it's, being an author is not an easy thing, and you have all... Now, I don't know what he's doing. He had a major, major. He had like a he was given, because he's had six New York Times bestselling authors, he was given, major tours and major traveling all over, not just the United States, all over the world. And I'm sure that's really put a damper on his whole program for the summer, because this was supposed to be the big summer of promoting his book. So I just want to help him out, and I will try to do more for him over the next few months. I want to promote his books because I think they are important for children. And as I said, and the other series that I really like is Owen Colfer's Artemis Fowl. But, for all of you out there, if you have a book that you want me to review, go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com, and just send me a note. There's a link right on the front page, and you can send me a message, and I will invite your favorite author or an author that you feel people should, particularly for children now, that children should read, and that would be a great way for them to spend some time during the next few months, because it looks like we're still going to be sort of in pandemic mode. And I'm still wearing this mask. I don't know how long we're going to have to do this. But send me a message, and I will be happy to invite your favorite author on. But meanwhile, get out there today and order. And Barnes & Noble has a special gift for you if you order from Barnes & Noble the book, which is the number 6 in the series, The School for Good and Evil, One True King. And then go to the webpage, terrific webpage. And kids, you can submit your drawings there and all sorts of messages and things to the author. And it's a great webpage, wonderful resource for children. So I just hope that you will, have a look at this book and get out there and help kids start reading and getting over this terrible time, and hopefully understanding what is good, what is evil, and try to look for the good in everybody. And meanwhile, remember what I always tell everyone: one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or if you're also very lucky, a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. And a page a day, and a year you'll have a book. Well, in his case, he had to write 2 pages a day in order to write a 600-page book. And he did it, and I'm so, so honored, really, that he was on today, because I think that he's a fantastic author. And I want to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room today. Thank you, Ed, for everything, keeping everything nice and clean here, and spraying everything, and keeping us away from this pandemic. Anyway, everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Bye-bye for now.